Conference record has joined the conference.
Well, welcome everybody again to tonight's topical call on transition into adulthood. We are so excited to have Mallory Sear with us from she is the National Youth Program Manager for GOT Transition, the National Center. Mallory started off with the Healthy Ready to Work National Center, and now that has transitioned over to GOT Transition. So she is a wealth of knowledge on transition and quite a young woman. I really enjoyed the time that I've gotten to know Mallory and her family as well. So without further ado, most of you, I did send the presentation and her handouts too. I'm going to post those on the web along with the recording. If you didn't get them, I did have some email problems earlier, yesterday, today, and Friday. So if you didn't get them, not to worry. They're going to be posted up on the website, and I'm going to assume that I'll do that probably tomorrow. So in the meantime, I'm sure Mallory is very open to any questions that anybody might have. So if you go on mute, make sure to unmute or we aren't going to hear you. And without further ado, Mallory, welcome to our topical call for Family Voices of North Dakota.
Thank you so much, Shaunine, and thanks for planning this and to the family-to-family in North Dakota for all the work that you guys do. I am super excited to be here. I do know some of you. So as Shaunine said, I am currently the National Program Manager for GOT Transition, the National Healthcare Transition Center. And before I jump into this, I just want to say off the bat that this presentation and the things I'm going to be talking about, this is simply my story and my experiences and kind of some of my lessons learned. And I am very open to answering any questions, as Shaunine said, and really having a dialogue at the end, as I know that everybody is going through their own transition process and has their own valuable stories and experiences to share. So with that, I will jump right in. So the outcomes of this presentation, I hope to be understanding how health affects all aspects of life, including transition, and really how you have to be healthy to contribute to any aspect of your life, whether it's work or even just spending time with your friends and family. The role that families can play to empower their young people with special healthcare needs or disabilities to be as independent as they can be, whatever that means for them. And I hope that you all will kind of take away some small ways that you can move forward and understand that progress is possible, even if it's in very small ways. There are things that you can do that are transition, even though they may not seem like large, overwhelming tasks necessarily. So during my time with HRTW and a belief that I continue to carry with me, our mantra was always that health has to do with everything. I've had a lot of people come up to me over the years and say, well, health doesn't affect my child. You know, they have a cognitive disability or they have a learning disability. I thought this was going to be something different. But when I give a presentation in person, I'll ask the room, how many people here have ever taken a sick day from school or work? And as you can imagine, pretty much every hand goes up. And that's a lot of parents and professionals and youth and family leaders. And whether they have a disability or not, everybody has to deal with their health at some point. So understanding that in order to be successful in school, in the community, or on the job, you have to know how to keep yourself healthy. And for young people with disabilities or chronic health issues, that may mean taking some extra steps and having some added understanding about how to do that. So why is transition important? That's kind of the age-old question. And according to the Children with Special Healthcare Needs Survey, this is actually the older data. I know some new numbers just came out. But at this point, it was documented that 58.8% of children with special healthcare needs ages 12 to 17 were not reaching successful transition outcomes. And that was defined as those young people who receive services necessary to make appropriate transitions to adult healthcare work or independence. Now, I also like to add about these numbers is that, as many of you may know, being in this work or having young people, key transition milestones such as changes in eligibility or education, things like that, a lot of that happens at 18. So if they're already not getting the services between 12 and 17, you can just imagine how difficult it will be when the golden age of 18 happens. So the next slide is a screenshot of the new national center, which is called Got Transition. And we do a lot of work with practices, keeping it really healthcare-based, to support providers in making sure young people with significant healthcare issues can transition to adult care. And there are a lot of details in that, and a lot of people will say, well, why do I have to leave my doctor that really understands my condition and I'm comfortable here and they treat me well? And but when you stay with a pediatrician for a long time, those adult health needs that start to develop and things that happen in the aging process really don't get handled appropriately. So that is sort of our main objective within the project. But my role really has a lot to do with making sure the consumer voice is heard in those learning collaboratives that we're doing, and also handling a lot of the social media. If you go to our website, in that lower module on the bottom left, there's a link to a monthly radio show that I co-host with Eileen Forlenza, who is on our advisory and is a pretty well-known family leader in all of this work. And every month, we have an interactive online webinar in the form kind of a radio show, and we discuss hot topics in transition, maybe where we're at in our lives or something that we're experiencing, and people can ask questions, and we really just have an open conversation about different transition topics. I talked a little bit about my experiences in transitioning to college and learning how to advocate for my health. Our next one, which is coming up on January 25th, is about when is the right time to start talking about transition, and is there such a thing as too early? And if you're interested in tuning into that, the link is right on our website on gottransition.org. And if you aren't able to participate live, I still encourage you to register, because you will get an email with the link to the recording after the broadcast. So I would love to have all of you participate and share the word about that, as we're really trying to get an increased following to really pump up the dialogue. It's a great interactive forum, and I'm really having a lot of fun with it. So I would love if you could join us for that. So the next slide talks about what is transition. A lot of times it depends on the context. For us, being in maternal and child health and family to families, we kind of think of it in terms of transition to adulthood and services and healthcare. But there are a lot of other meanings that it can have. So it's important to kind of remember who you're talking to when you're saying transition. But the official definition by Webster is a passage from one state, stage, subject, or place to another. Other components when you're thinking about healthcare transition: self-determination, person-centered planning, preparing for that transition to adult healthcare, work and independence, whatever that may look like for that individual, and some sort of inclusion in community life, getting your young person out there and knowing, the kind of having that social interaction and being able to see and be seen. Next slide. So healthcare transition, more specifically, is defined as transition is the deliberate, coordinated provision of developmentally appropriate, culturally competent health assessments, counseling, and referrals. And that's where people's eyes sort of start to glaze over. So hopefully as we go on, we can kind of break it down a little bit. So a question I get asked a lot in my role, even with the new project and kind of my experience, is what are the youth saying? Well, I often answer that with, I am only one youth. I am only one young adult sharing my story. But as I've done this work over the past 4 years, I have heard a lot of comments and a lot of experiences from other young people. And basically the consensus when we're talking about advocating and transition is the youth voice is valuable and needs to be heard. And young people really just want to be treated with dignity and respect, and understanding that even though they may have a diagnosis or certain disabilities, they really do have a lot of skills and a lot of expertise and a lot to contribute in the work environment. So I think it's important that, you know, as we encourage our young people to reach independence and take these steps, that we remember that everybody has those skills and those gifts to contribute. Next slide. So on the next slide, another thing that we want is to eliminate the discrimination, make your community disability friendly. And of course, I know a lot of people, when we think about accessibility, we think about having ramps, places, having elevators, and a lot about physical access. But it can also mean just making sure that conversations are had in an accessible way. And when you go to medical appointments, that everybody is on the same page. Nobody feels like they're not understanding what's happening. And for young people, it's really important that they're a part of the process. So remembering before you launch into, you know, doctor speak or start talking over their heads at meetings, that, you know, it's really important that they understand what's going on, because eventually they're going to be the ones making those decisions or, you know, taking care of their own health. So they really need to know from the get-go what's going on. And the other thing is having knowledge to be an informed consumer and knowing what's available for resources, how to advocate for that, and make sure that their needs get met. It can be pretty easy when your parents have done things for you, you know, pretty much on autopilot when you get older, really kind of taking that for granted and saying, oh, wow, I didn't realize all the things that had to go into just keeping me alive on a daily basis. So really keeping your young person kind of in the loop of what their needs are, and sharing that responsibility as they get older. So the next slide is kind of one of my favorites, and I thought this was a good metaphor. It's the slide that says there is no one-size-fits-all, and it has a picture of a woman in a Snuggie on it. And I thought this was a good metaphor for, as I said earlier, the concept that no two transitions are going to be alike. One person may grow up, move out on their own at 18, go to college, get a job, you know, kind of that chronology. And other people may have a different path. Some people may go straight to work. Some people may not be able to work and may participate in some sort of day program and need additional support to get their daily needs met. And one thing that I want to stress is that all of those are okay. I currently still live with my parents after moving out on my own for a while. One thing led to another, and I realized it was kind of harder than I expected, and there were some things that I wasn't prepared for. And, you know, so I'm back home, and I'm looking at taking some different steps. But does that mean that I failed at transition? Well, I like to hope not, since I'm here talking about it to you. So if I did indeed fail, then I am probably not the best person for that. But I don't think it's a matter of success or failure. I think it's just finding what's right for each individual and making sure you have the right support to make those things happen. The next slide is another one that I like, and it's the one that says transition does not discriminate. And I found this picture, and I thought it was really appropriate. And it's a young woman in her graduation gown, I'm guessing from college, and she's carrying her suitcases and her boxes, and she's going back home to live with mom and dad. And I have seen that happen time and time again with a lot of my non-disabled friends, graduates of Yale and Brown and ridiculous schools that, you know, to supposedly provide you with all the tools to be a successful adult. You know, then you realize that when it comes to being ultimately independent, especially right now, with the way our world is looking, it's really challenging. And so as you think about your own young people or your own journey, I think it's really important to remember that we're not alone. We're not the only people who may have a difficult time finding a job or don't have the ideal living circumstances that we want, and that it's really sort of a new wave where times are really challenging again. So in that regard, I think it's even more important for families and guardians and support circles to really be on target with transition and do what needs to be done to make sure that, you know, everybody is able to, you know, be independent or stay safe and do what's best for them at the time. So the next slide talks about how advocacy begins at home. And I think a lot of times when we talk about independence and advocacy and leadership and all these big buzzwords, people automatically think about making visits to Capitol Hill or calling your senator or speaking at a conference and planning meetings and all these things that may not be for everybody. But I think when we do think about leadership and advocacy, we need to think about being advocates for ourselves first. So helping your young person be a leader in their own healthcare is really important, and understanding their needs and their life. And that can start with these basic things like knowing their diagnosis, knowing their medication, being able to explain that to other people, really starting to be a teacher about their condition. Giving them a role and responsibility in the household, having them maybe answer the phone or get the mail or help set the table, not kind of putting on the kid gloves because they're the ones with a disability and saying, well, you know, so-and-so doesn't have to do that because of their disability. You know, that will isolate them within the family with their own siblings, but it also is not preparing them for reality when other people may not have that special treatment because of their disability. Helping them to advocate at school, asking for support from their teachers or maybe their aide or support person. And even just things like having friends, being involved in activities, and really getting them to be a part of that community again. The next slide is a screenshot of one of the handouts that Doneen is going to upload. And it's a picture of the portable medical summary. And this is something that Patty Hackett taught me about during my time at HRTW. And it's a great resource. Even if you have a complex medical condition, all of your medical information can fit right on that one page. And let me tell you, on the next slide, there are so many different ways to use this. And just since I have filled mine out, I have used it in times of emergency where I may not be at my best, able to advocate for myself. I simply hand this over. It can really speed up registration in the ER in times of emergency. I've used it when I needed to prove eligibility for services and I wasn't sure kind of what information they needed about my condition. This really breaks it down as to how intricate, you know, my needs really are. And also just having it with you in all your emergency information, and it really speaks for you when you aren't able to. So another interesting story about this is that it can be a really good review for you just filling it out. When I did it with Patty, she kind of laughed at me because I forgot things like that I had my gallbladder out or I was in the hospital, you know, for one thing or another. But when you focus on living your life day to day and not being necessarily your own medical encyclopedia, those things kind of blur together. So making sure that you have it all accurately documented is really a great tool. So the next step, the next slide, is talking about another handout that Patty and I created when I first started all of this, and it's called Changing Roles. And this I really like to use kind of just as a conversation starter, and it lists a lot of small strategies for your child to kind of take over one at a time. And so you go down the list and say, is this something that they'll be able to do? Who does it now? And if not, who can you get to do that task as a support person? So it really triggers a lot of conversation. It might bring up some fear and discomfort, whether for you or your young person, when they may never have thought about doing these things like filling their own prescriptions or making their own appointments, all of these things. And another interesting way to do it, if your child is capable of this, is you fill out one and your young person fills out the other, and then see kind of what they are willing to take on themselves and if that aligns with your expectations or your hopes for them. The next slide. So, and a lot of this changing roles business is about finding the balance. For example, when I was younger, I didn't do a lot of things for myself medically, not because I wasn't capable. I probably could have long before I did, but my parents were really focused on making sure that I had a childhood and that I was able to be a kid, focus on school and my friends and my activities, and not worry about, you know, where my medicine was coming from or, you know, making insurance phone calls. I remember my mom used to say to me, you have your whole life to worry about this. You just be a kid. And for me, I think that made a huge difference. And now, you know, I do manage all of that, and I understand why she kind of didn't want me to stress out about it. But I was always really informed about my condition, always given the option to participate or have conversations with my doctors. But it wasn't something that was forced. And I think because of that, I was more receptive to it as I did get older and understood the importance of me taking responsibility. Next slide. So again, in preparing for changing roles, as I said before, a lot of key transition takes place at 18, which is the legal age, whether things change medically with a diagnosis or in your head or not. 18 is when those things shift. So it's really important to be thinking about what that's going to mean for your child, whether you are going to go through the guardianship process or whether they're going to be able to make decisions for yourself, for themselves, excuse me, and just to really start having those conversations about what will change so that doesn't sneak up on you. Next slide. So the next slide is a little snippet of things that are listed on the Changing Roles handout. And I know a lot of parents gasp when they see before age 10 with all the X's. But I really want to stress again that this is simply for conversation and to start thinking about those little things that you as a parent may do on autopilot and really say, you know, my child might be able to do that. When I was going through this handout with Patty, I had already graduated college, and I thought I was all high and mighty on the transition train and had my act together. And then as I was going down this list, I was like, huh, I don't do that. But all of these things were really easy and things that I could do. So just having it presented to me, I was then able to go home and have these conversations with my mom and kind of shift that. And so, again, just a conversation starter, just something to be thinking about, those small steps that you can take.
Mallory, can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
This is Deneen. Have you and Eileen thought about developing something for families that have children with a significant cognitive disability? And just some thoughts on transition and how to help them become more independent?
In terms of a resource, do you mean? Like the...
Right. As a resource for others?
We haven't discussed it at this point. But we've discussed a lot of things kind of to that on the radio show, as Eileen does offer the perspective of a parent of a nonverbal young adult who is undergoing transition. And we have talked about having a show about technology that's available for support. So it may be something to discuss and maybe have kind of an episode about that or some way to brainstorm further. Because you're right, I think having something for that different population could be helpful.
Yep, I do too. Thank you.
Yep. So on the next slide, again, talking about being informed decision makers, understanding HIPAA and the confidentiality that comes with health insurance, understanding what it means to give consent, giving assent before they can legally give consent, and again, understanding those concepts of guardianship and having a support person if your child is not going to be able to take those steps on their own. The next slide is about maintaining health insurance, and I know so well that this is a huge black cloud when it comes to transition and something that can be very prohibitive in terms of thinking about work and independence. And for me, one of the things that continues to be the most difficult. And as you know, with the Affordable Care Act, things keep changing. And so I really encourage you to start looking into what the options are as your child does age. With the Affordable Care Act currently, young adults can stay on their parents' insurance until they are 26, and there are going to be plans available for people with pre-existing conditions and all kinds of things that may not take effect for a couple more years. But again, I'm not the expert on that, and I'm still kind of learning my way with all of that. So I encourage you to check out those two websites right there. The first one is healthcare.gov that has everything about the Affordable Care Act. You can click your demographic and find out what your next steps are or look for providers and things like that. And I also encourage you to connect with the other national center known as the Catalyst Center, and their expertise is around benefits. And they have been very helpful to me in my experience, and they really know what's going on even by state with the Affordable Care Act. So if that's something that you're dealing with in your transition scenario, I really encourage you to go to those two places and hopefully be able to figure out what works best for you. The next slide. One thing that is so important in all of this, and something that I have found, is it's not always necessarily about knowing how to quote unquote navigate the system, but how to move forward and stay positive and be successful. And I say successful subjectively, as that looks different for everybody. But it's how do you do those things without relying on the system? And one of the biggest things is surround yourself with positive people. When you are having struggles with eligibility or health crises, it's really those people that you go to that say, I get it, or that give you advice that could possibly change your life. For me, a lot of big things that happened were because of people I talked to. I ended up doing this work because I attended a transition conference as a student and simply shared my story and got recognized, and someone said, hey, you know, we want you. We want you to be a change agent for other people. And in terms of me driving, I tried to go through different organizations and figure out what adaptations I needed. But what ended up happening was I met a young woman with a similar disability, and she said, why are they telling you that you need this and this to drive? Here's what I use, and here's where you need to go and the people you need to contact. And within the next couple of years, after an 8-year battle, I had my license. And so I think it's important to remember that going through these steps, they do take time and energy. You know, nothing worth it is easy, I always say. And it may be difficult, and it may be emotionally draining and a struggle. But sometimes you need to keep going, whether for yourself or for your child, and just kind of shift the perspective and think outside the box about finding different ways to do things and not just relying on what may be the first steps or what works for everybody else. Because as we know, every transition is different. Next slide. So this is kind of the attitude that I had taught to me growing up, and it was imagine the possibilities. My parents were always saying, well, what do you want to do? Well, what do you want to do? And as you can see there, there are some pictures of some of the stuff that I did. My dad was a ski instructor, so I was always doing adaptive skiing. That's me at my senior prom, dance recital, driving a backhoe for my mom's 50th birthday. We rented a sand pit and a backhoe because that was something that she always wanted to do. So I decided to try it too. It's not my second job by any means. And then driving my first adapted vehicle, which was not the key to success, but one of my attempted endeavors. And so let's go to the next slide. So again, it was always kind of the whatever you want to do, we'll find a way. I was never told no because of my medical challenges. It was not always easy, but I had amazing support. We had a lot of creative thinkers who were willing to get me from point A to point B, and we really made it work. And so as you can see in the next slide, kind of a summary of my journey, my college graduation, high school graduation, giving my senior reading as my degree was in creative writing. And the funny thing is, if you look at that picture of me on Capitol Hill, that was actually during the AmChip conference a couple years ago, I really didn't have any plan to be in this work. I didn't think that simply sharing my story and my experiences could lead to me advocating on a national level for others who were having similar challenges or who, you know, were dealing with similar things. I always sort of just lived my life, and now as I look back, what I have learned and done has now kind of been my path to what I hope is ultimately making a difference for other people. So I really encourage you to take it one day at a time, look at the possibilities, try not to feel limited because of a diagnosis, even though that's, of course, easier said than done. But really just imagine the potential that your young people can have, and you would really be surprised as to where they can go. The next slide is something that I came up with, and I thought I was being super clever, is when you think about vocational transition or even just setting goals of any kind, remember the three A's, achievements or accomplishments, abilities, and aspirations. I've seen and experienced a lot of what are they able to do, questions being asked. What is their minimum capability? When I first started looking for employment when I was in high school, people were asking me, well, could you fill a coffee cup at Dunkin' Donuts? Could you work at a grocery store? And the physical limitations would have been so difficult with so many adaptations, I eventually said, well, it's not worth it for me to look at summer employment. We'll revisit this when I'm done school. But when I was done school, somebody had already noticed what I was already doing in terms of advocacy, and that became a job for me. So I think it's really about looking at the big picture of what is your child already doing and having those conversations from the time they're small of what do you want to do? You know, what are their likes and dislikes? And just asking, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? I feel like we're sort of in a society now where we're so realistic and non-dreamers that we just don't ask those questions anymore. It's more about how am I ever going to find a job, and everything is so difficult. And we just forget to ask the basic questions and let our young people dream. And so I think we really need to get back to that. And you would be surprised what the answers could be. So again, the next slide. What questions to ask? You know, whether you are looking at employment or a valuable way for your young person to spend their time, what classes are their favorites in school? What are they good at? What are they drawn to? What do they enjoy doing? And asking them, you know, where do you see yourself? What do you really want to do? And then, of course, you know, understanding the realism and the challenges that might play a part, but also how can you be creative and work around that? I mean, for me, it probably wouldn't have made sense for me at, 3'9" to say that I wanted to play for the WNBA. But, there were things that I looked at and that I wanted to try, and we really made it happen one way or another. So I think just remembering to ask these questions and keep forward thinking with a positive attitude. The next slide is one that I found from one of my favorite online bloggers or comic writers, and it's got a picture of two coconuts, and one says, "I'm going to be a pina colada," and the other says, "I'm going to be a bra." So pretending that these coconuts are young people with disabilities, perhaps they have the same diagnosis, maybe they went to the same school, maybe they're in the same family, and, to the naked eye, they look the same. But when you ask them, what do you want to do, they both have very different goals. So again, it's really important to remember that just because somebody with one form of a disability or one experience really succeeded at one thing, that may not be the path for somebody else. So it's really important to remember that everybody's journey is individual. Next slide. So the next slide is a picture of me with my fellow coconut, my little sister Maisie, who is currently my best friend and partner in crime. And there's an 8-year difference between us. And even though she is of average height, and you really can't tell by those pictures, we both have the same life-threatening digestive illness that has caused us to have serious medical issues over the course of our lives and requires some intricate medical care. And as I look back on both of our transition journeys, they have been very different. I had some positive experiences in school, and because her disability was more invisible, she had a really rough time, even with the same educators and the same providers. She really struggled. And now she's doing really well, thank goodness. And she actually just got invited to a federally funded anti-bullying summit in Washington, D.C., and was on the news down there. So I'm kind of a little proud of her. She's my little prodigy. But again, if you look at those pictures and think about the coconuts, we had a very similar upbringing, but we also had a very different experience. But one thing that we did have in common and continue to live to this day is that we have always put our life on the front burner while simply kind of rolling with our diagnosis and doing what we had to do to stay safe. But it was always about, what do we want to do? How can we not? We can't. So that is kind of how her and I have gotten to where we are. And she's currently just finishing up her first semester of college for psychology. And she got straight A's, and I'm very proud. So she is well on her way to being a leader in change making as well. Next slide. The next slide is a picture of me taking risks, if you will. And although I may not encourage everybody to climb 35-foot rock climbing walls or do cheerleading stunts in heels, I think it's important that we remember some of the best learning experiences are from the times that you fall and have to get back up. And again, not compromising safety, but sometimes when we think about our young people learning those hard lessons, sometimes they have to learn them on their own instead of mom or dad or their support person saying, "You have to do this, you have to do this, you have to do this." Maybe letting them kind of safely fall once or twice will make them go, "Oh, you know what, I do see the importance of that now, and that's something that I need to be more careful of." So being there as a support person without hovering or kind of putting them in a bubble, if you will, you'd really be surprised at those lessons that can be learned from struggling a little. So as we wrap up, and I want to have some time for Q&A and some discussion, I want you to think about your action plan. And there's a slide that I don't have in here, but I usually include, and it's a picture of my hero, Yoda. And it says, "Do or not do, there is no try." And I think that's really cool, because how many times a day do we say, "Oh, I'll try to get to that. Oh, I'll try to do this. Oh, I'll try to do that." And where does it end up? At the bottom of the pile. At the bottom of your inbox, at the bottom of your to-do list, and it doesn't get done. So what I encourage you to do at the end of this presentation, whether to yourself or whether you email it to somebody, commit to taking small steps with your child, with yourself, changing one perspective on something. It doesn't have to be big, but thinking about in 1 week I will commit to, by next month I will commit to do, and in 3 months I will commit to. And really kind of sticking to it and moving forward in those small ways. Now the next slide, I don't know if this works. Oh, I don't think it does. But when I have the audio set up, it's supposed to play Journey, Don't Stop Believing, because I'm clever like that. And it says transition is a journey. And I think that is so true. And it's so easy to get caught up in the checklist and the resources and the webinars and the conferences that we spend all this time learning and learning and learning about how to transition. And life is happening now. And it's important that we don't forget that whether we have our trials and tribulations and our medical challenges, as we watch our young people grow up, this is the now. It's happening. And so I think although it can be difficult, we need to learn to value that and appreciate every moment, as no matter how hard or how easy or what it looks like for you, this is your life journey and your young adult's journey. And so I think we need to keep that perspective as we move forward and not just have it be a to-do list. So value each moment, keep a positive attitude, keep moving forward, and that's the best advice that I can give you. So with that, I will wrap up. There's my contact information, my personal website, the Got Transition website, and I will open it up for questions, and thank you all for having me on your call tonight.
Does anybody have any questions for Mallory at all? Joan, Brenda, anyone? Mary?
This is Brenda. I actually have a couple comments. First of all, Mallory, what an incredible presentation, and it's so incredibly valuable. And my daughter is nonverbal and actually is going to need a lot of additional supports, whereas you know there's a large gap in that for the transition right now. And I'm happy to say that our state collectively with Pathfinders and Carlson Center are working very diligently to fill that gap in our state. And so many of your words were very encouraging. And I think the questions, the Q&A, the questions to ask are very applicable no matter what your child's abilities or disabilities are. And and I hope you don't mind, I've been asked to do a presentation at the Parent Involvement Conference regarding this issue of transition for children and into young adulthood that need greater supports. And I hope it's okay with you if I can plagiarize a little bit of this, because these questions are really great questions for parents to be asking, you know, the minute that they turn 14 and that word transition comes into our lives.
Yeah.
To help identify what our children, what are they passionate about, what do they like to do. And I just found this information incredibly valuable, even though Hannah, you know, her life will look quite a bit different, you know, than yours. However, I do believe, even with her disabilities, she's going to be a great teacher to others, as you are, and it's my job, as her mom, you know, to be her voice in that. And I just want to thank you for all the work that you've done, and helping inspire us parents and reminding us that this is a journey. And and I have been caught up. You know, you nailed me on the head with the learning, and webinars and my checklists and my to-do lists, and I've been not sleeping at night about it. And mm-hmm. I need to take a breath and just enjoy the ride a little bit and help Hannah, or let Hannah guide me through her journey.
Well, thank you so much for saying all that. And yes, absolutely. Take whatever you need. Feel free to look at our website and email me if there's anything else that you would find helpful, or if you have any questions. I'd love to be supportive. That sounds like a great event, and feel free to use anything.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
And this is Joan, and Mallory, I totally agree with Brenda. You are wonderful and a lot of great information, and Brenda, very well said from your aspect, too. So, very well.
Mallory?
Oh, Mary, I know you're on the call. I don't know if you're muted right now or not, but Mary, I'd love for us to be able to visit about, you know, Maria, your Maria is right on the verge of all of this, and we're working very hard on some things and love a chance for us to sit down and talk about the knowledge you've gained and questions you have and resources that we need to find and to move forward with that.
And the other thing I was going to mention is there is a plan in the works. Mallory, I don't know if Eileen has told you about it, but in the beginning of April, Eileen Forlenza, that works very closely with Mallory on this project, will be helping with the North Dakota Early Childhood Comprehensive System. She's going to come to do some work on family professional partnerships and why that's important. Some of you will have that opportunity to meet her in the beginning of April as well. So that's great.
That would be great. This is Mary. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Well, okay, good, because I wasn't sure if I was muted again. But I, too, want to thank Mallory. I have to say I would go head-to-head with Brenda as far as making lists and things like that. But I think what's really valuable is just kind of looking at kind of what your parents did, what you did, Mallory, in terms of, you know, kind of like let it roll, see what you like. And I've been trying to do that more and more. And one day, just out of the blue, Maria says to me, Mom, me no go to college, okay? and I was just surprised because, you know, she'd kind of come to that decision herself. And so I started listening more and more. And I think the materials that were given tonight and also the whole presentation kind of opens that door to thinking in a different way that you don't usually encounter, you know, as you're rushing from site to site or doctor to doctor. So I thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.
Mary.
What?
I said thanks, Mary. Did anyone else have any comments at all or questions? Well, Mallory, as always, you've done a superb job. I'm just sick that I'm not going to get to see you in February, but hopefully I'll get to see you in the near future anyway. And again, this for if you have family or providers that you would like to have listened to this recording, we're going to have it up on the website tomorrow with the handouts. One thing I will mention about the presentation as well is the portable medical summary is even useful for elderly parents, for yourself, for just about any given circumstance, and it's been used repeatedly on a number of occasions and with great success with the individuals that have been using it. So that's a great tool, Mallory, and I'm glad that you added that to your presentation too. So.
Hey, Danine, this is Brenda. I do actually have a question. The slide that came up about the public insurance, it's a public insurance in that North Dakota is one of the states that does not automatically, SSI and medical assistance do not automatically go hand in hand?
Correct.
Okay, so does that mean then currently in our state, okay, so when Hannah turns 18, obviously she will get SSI, but then does that just mean that she stays on the DD waiver forever?
She should roll over into the DD waiver, but they will make you go through a reapplication process for SSI.
With the DD waiver, though, it's a waiver. It might not be there. You hear what I'm saying?
Yes and no.
Yes and no what? Yes, you hear what I'm saying or no? What does that mean?
Well, let's talk about it tomorrow. We'll brainstorm. I want to make sure that I give you the right information.
Okay, because like you said, reapply for SSI, I got that. But then, you know, for Hannah, for medical assistance, she's not going to qualify under the current medical assistance regulations.
do some checking on that. I don't want to tell you the wrong thing, so.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Anyone else with any questions or comments? All right. Well, Mallory, thank you so very, very much for doing this, and I will also send you the link, too, so that you can share it with this presentation that you did tonight. So I thank you with all my heart and can't wait to see you again.
Thank you so much, and I will look forward to it, and thank you, everybody, for tuning in.
All right. Thanks. Good night, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will now end.